So cause number 1319379CV, Ball Stay LLC versus Texas Windstorm Insurance Association.
May it please the court. As we said, my name is Todd Lipscomb. I represent the Ball Stay Inn & Suites, which is a hotel down in Corpus Christi, Texas. Y'all's know it. And for more than a decade, TWIA insured this property against wind damage and hail damage. Before trial, the parties stipulated, because there's a change in the legislature, that as of 2012, all the way until this policy was canceled in October of 2015, the same terms, the same conditions governed this policy. And so if property sustained damage from wind or hail, direct physical loss, it was covered. In 2012, there were concerns about the condition of the property. TWIA had someone go out and inspect, TDI had their engineer go out there, and they said, if you make these repairs, we'll continue to insure you. And in March of 2013, the engineer certified and says, this roof meets TWIA's insurance guidelines, and the policies were issued. The roof was in good shape. In July of 2015, Ball Stay turned in a claim for wind and hail damage to the property. Every single person who looked at this roof determined that there was wind damage. There was a dispute about whether it was hail damage. There's a dispute about the extent of it, but every single person concluded it was wind damage. At trial, TWIA's own corporate representative admitted, as well as others, that that damage had to occur after the inspection done by the engineer in 2013. So what we do is we have a window that between the March of 2013 and July of 2015, wind damage occurred to this property. And we believe that meets the plaintiff's burden of proof. We have shown that under coverage policy period, during the time that TWIA had these terms and conditions, wind damage occurred, and therefore we showed that there was a covered peril. Where the dispute arose was, do we know this exact date? How much was the damage? And according to TWIA's own expert, the person who they sent out to the property to estimate just the wind damage they found, that amount was approximately $340,000 to repair these three or four patches primarily that were very large, tarts the roof had blown off. When the claim was decided in July of 2015, TWIA sent out, or excuse me, obtained a report from an engineering firm, but they didn't send out a Texas licensed engineer. Instead, they went and got an architect from Philadelphia, not licensed to even do business in Texas, goes out to the property. He also sees wind damage, but he sees one thing. He says, I looked at some satellite images, and I believe some of this damage started in December, or was at least there, excuse me, there in existence by December of 2014. Why is that important? That's all within the coverage period. This thing goes all the way back for a decade. The reason it's important is there's a potential limitations defense for TWIA. This court has looked at this issue in the past. It was a different panel. And it says that the insured must report the claim with 1 year. Well, the covered peril is wind. We've met our burden. Now, if TWIA wants to assert an affirmative defense, late reporting, and this court has decided that's actually strictly construed and doesn't even require a prejudice requirement, then that one thing is strictly construed for 1 year. TWIA can meet that burden. But in this case, they didn't. And their own adjuster pointed it out to them. Their adjuster, after receiving this architect's report, came back and said, this report doesn't say that this damage is more than a year old. It says it occurred as of December 2014. Well, since we turned in the claim in July of 2015, a one-year window would go all the way back to July of 2014. Thus leaving us approximately a six to seven month window between when the 1 year reporting period would have begun, as well as until the time period that at least their expert thought the damage began. Our expert thought it happened in 2015. The jury obviously disagreed with that, and they concluded, and that's why they sent out the question saying, can we consider other dates? And based upon the way this charge is worded, because this charge didn't ask, did the damage occur within this time period, and then ask a separate question about whether or not it was reported timely, it one, conflated the burdens, put all the burdens on the plaintiff, and two, it took this policy, a policy that on a year-by-year basis provided coverage for 365 days. And then
in your charge submissions, you say that you asked, and I think you gave us an example of one that was rejected. You asked the trial court to charge the jury with answering whether the covered damage occurred during the policy periods of August 31, 2012 through 2015.
Yes,
so
sir.
That was rejected. Did you ask for one for just that 1 year time period that you mentioned?
I believe we had a similar question, but I don't think that's proper for the reason that it would still put the burden upon us to show the damage occurring within that one period. Instead, I think the proper format's exactly how we intended to originally do it and what we've submitted in the brief, which is to show a loss, a covered loss. And that's what the question in the TWIA statute requires, is that you got to show coverage. Because the question doesn't ask about whether a claim is proper, but whether coverage is proper. We did that because we stipulated terms and conditions for that entire time period. Then in order to allocate the burden properly to TWIA, I think a separate question that needs to come out there and says, did the damage you found in response to question one occur before July 8th of 2014? And that way, I think the burden of proof is allocated. I think we did submit one that may have combined the two, but in getting ready for this, I think that's a problem because it then takes that affirmative defense and imposes it all part of one question, which is going to ask in the failure to comply question, which we have the burden of proof on, if we met it or not. And I think
Counselor, didn't your proposed instruction number one, it didn't track the statutory language, did it?
No, it did not, Your Honor. And I think that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. To truly get it in the best form, I think you want to say, was the denial proper? Because if you ask it in the form of the statute, I think you're going to have a hard time arguing. I certainly would, at least, that that is improper. Now, at the end of the day, what happened, and I think both sides submitted this, we used the failure to comply language. And the failure to comply is what the pattern jury charge uses for breach of contract.
But wouldn't you agree that that language is broader than the statutory language, whether denial of coverage was proper, you know, and if that is the case, how is that language harmful to your client?
I think the failure to comply language on its own could potentially be broader, but the problem here becomes the instructions that are associated with it. And so one, we had the limitations on dates. And so that's that first issue we've talked about. But in terms of proper versus failure to comply, what is also incorporated into it, which is an aspect of the proper, is the known or should have known language. And getting into the nuances of what proper means or doesn't mean, I think that's one aspect of proper, but I think there may be additional ones. I think in terms of the idea of, was their investigation reasonable? And I think this is kind of the wormhole we end up going down into, that if we ask it in terms of, rather than parsing these questions out, A, is there coverage, first of all, and then B, if there is coverage, is there a defense to it? If we start conflating and putting the bad faith terminology in there and the knowing violation in there, we get kind of into this Castile problem we discuss, that we may have proper and improper things combined into just one question, and we don't know how to segregate them out. So unfortunately, although we're trying to get ultimately to that issue, I think we have to parse it out as separately so we make sure the burdens of proofs are done properly and that we don't combine proper and invalid theories.
So putting the knowledge requirement aside and getting back to the dates, you say in your brief that you did not allege that these particular dates were when the damage was caused, but yet in your pleadings, you do. In your amended petition, you did plead April 14th and May 23rd of 15. So if you pled that, and as my understanding, I have not obviously read the record, but there was evidence that those were the two storms that probably caused the damage. Why was it error then for the trial court to charge the jury on those two dates?
We did, and we tried to prove that it occurred on those two dates, or arguments that the jury ultimately, in my opinion, rejected. However, we also specifically pleaded, and it's referenced in our brief, that TWIA knew that this damage could have occurred, since it only argued that it happened before December of 2014, that this damage still occurred within the covered time period. And this policy doesn't insure for a specific date. It doesn't limit its coverage to only two dates or two dates that you allege. What this policy does, it says, if damage occurs within this 365 days, FOIA owes it. And that goes back to the, I guess, the essence of the statutory question was the denial of coverage proper, not the specific claim or not the specific date.
Okay. So in other words, you're saying that there was really no evidence regarding any other possible storms within the reporting period. Is that correct?
And that's a tricky question. There is our expert who believes that it occurred, the wind damage on May 24th, 2015, or the hail damage on April 13th, 2015. What we have is the undisputed assessment that wind damage occurred between the time periods that TWIA insured the policy. And it doesn't specify a specific storm event. And that's the trick. This policy isn't saying we only insured named short storms. We only insure Harvey. We only insure Ike. It says if there is wind damage, windstorm damage occurring to it, you get winds all the time in Corpus Christi. And it's undisputed that the wind caused this damage. And so by an easier example, if we took out the reporting requirement, and on day one, someone went out, inspected the property and said, there's no wind damage here. This roof is certifiable. On the last day of the policy, someone goes back out and says, you know what? We found wind damage. There may be a problem. We know that no matter what, that wind damage occurred during that policy period. But to say that occurred on December 15th or January 8th or March 4th may be difficult, if not impossible. But there's no dispute that we have coverage there, and there's no dispute that that coverage occurred during the insured time period. And that's kind of the scenario that we're faced with here. We know that this wind damage occurred. It's undisputed, maybe dispute about the amount or the extent of it, but we have undisputed testimony that $340,000 wind damage occurred to this property during TWIA's coverage, and that the only remaining issue out there is whether or not that was reported timely. And that's what was not submitted as a separate question. And by their own admission, TWIA admits they can't show you that the damage occurred prior to July of 2014. They can only prove that it occurred, in their opinion, before December of 2014. And that is an incomplete limitations defense. It only shows that it's a possibility within the window. And that's why this case needs to be remanded. Thank you, Your Honor. I see the rest of my time back. Or reserve it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lipscomb. Okay. And Mr. Sawyer.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please the court and Mr. Lipscomb. Listening to him boil down, the main issue appears to be in this case is whether or not TWIA's one-year reporting limit is a requirement to show coverage. It is a condition of coverage. And TWIA, of course, asserts it is. If it is, then it's the plaintiff's burden to prove that the loss occurred within this one-year reporting requirement. If I understand the thrust of his argument, he is saying that all he has to show is some or identify some wind or hail damage, regardless of when it occurs, then the burden shifts to Texas Windstorm to prove when it occurred. This ignores the fact that the one-year reporting requirement is statutory. It's not just in our policy. It is required by statute under 2210-573A. And to refresh everyone's memory, I'm going to read it briefly. Subject to circumstance that doesn't apply here, an insured must file a claim under an association policy not later than the first anniversary of the date on which the damage to property that is the basis of the claim occurs. Now, Texas Windstorm is purely a statutory creation. And because of that, it's different. It's treated differently than other carriers. Common law that would apply to how rules apply and how the law applies to other insurance carriers do not necessarily apply to Texas Windstorm. And that was the gist of the holding of this court in Housing and Community Services in 2017. You may recall that the issue on that case was whether or not TWIA had to show prejudice, which other carriers do. And looking at the fact that TWIA was solely a statutory creation and required strict adherence to the rules, the court concluded, and I quote from this court, while acknowledging the PAG, Prodigy, and Hernandez decisions, which were about other carriers, TWIA argues these cases are inapplicable and distinguishable from the present case because of the special statutory nature of windstorm coverage and its departure from common law, we agree. And the basis for that and the reason that supported that reasoning on why, you know, we're going to treat TWIA differently and we're going to require strict adherence to the statute is the necessity to maintain a market or maintain TWIA as availability to provide insurance for insureds along the coast where we can't get it. The purpose of strict and compliance is to ensure this adequate market for windstorm insurance along the coast. And TWIA is intended to serve as a carrier of last resort. So the statute was designed to ensure that windstorm insurance remained available where the risk along the coast was greatest and people can't otherwise get insurance. So filing a claim within the 1 year loss requirement, the statutory condition of coverage, becomes very, very important in ensuring the viability of Texas Windstorm.
Counselor, let me interrupt you.
Sure.
Do you agree or disagree that that the timely reporting requirement is an exclusion to coverage? And if so, wouldn't TWIA be then have the burden at this point, at that point?
No, Texas Windstorm asserts that it is a requirement for coverage.
So not an exclusion.
Not exclusion, correct. It is a requirement. They have to show and they have to prove the date of loss was within the 1 year reporting requirement.
Well, okay. I can envision a situation where an insured can't pinpoint a precise storm or precise date, as Mr. Lipscomb is alluding to. They're saying it had to have happened sometime within that 1 year time period prior to them filing their claim. What does an insured do in a situation like that when maybe there have been multiple storms and they don't know precisely when the damage occurred, but it was within the 1 year? Could a question such as is being proposed or argued here be feasible, that damage occurred within a 1 year period?
Well, their burden is to prove that it occurred within the 1 year period, but that's not what's being argued here. That's not the question that they're claiming should have been submitted. They're claiming that all they had to do was show some damage. And here I've got policies going back multiple years, which is typical of insurance along the coast. They have years of coverage. So all I have to show is that I had some loss during, this is what they're arguing now. They're not arguing that I have to show within what I being Valstate has to show within a 1 year period, a loss. That's not their argument. Their argument is all I have to show is a loss. It could have occurred anytime. And it's Texas Windstorm's burden to show that. And that would create an explosion of litigation. If their burden wasn't to show a date within that 1 year period, then all they'd have to say is, you know, at some point I lost a shingle here. I don't know when. I can file a claim. I can file a lawsuit and provide no notice to Texas Windstorm when I think it occurred. And I'm going to put the burden on Texas Windstorm to do it. And that's the problem. They submitted a question, and this is important, I think. They submitted a proposed question under this theory that it's Texas Windstorm's burden. And I think the question they submit is very telling. In his brief, he says, here's how it should have been submitted, that TWIA should have had the burden to prove that the loss was outside the coverage period. And this is clerk record page 710, and this was the rejected question that was in the nature of an affirmative defense question, but he proposed it. And it says, quote, did the damage to the property that is the basis of Valstate's claim occur prior to July 8, 2014? Now, that's the outside of the 1 year period. Did it occur outside? Answer yes or no to windstorm or hail. Keeping in mind that a yes answer requires a finding by a preponderance of the evidence by at least 10 jurors, assuming it's 10 to answer all the other questions. What if the jury can't tell either? What if they simply say, I've got windstorm damage, TWIA's burden to prove it. Here's the question they have to answer. And TWIA has to prove by a preponderance of evidence that it occurred on a date before that period. But as time goes by, it gets more and more difficult to determine when a loss occurs. So if TWIA doesn't carry its burden, not because they can't, Karen, because no one can determine when a loss was. The jury can't determine, and TWEA can't determine. They would have to answer no. So what is the effect of a no answer to that question? Does it mean, therefore, as they would argue, that it creates coverage? How can that be fair? How can that further the intent of the legislative scheme regarding TWEA when the default position is if you can't, if no one can prove when it occurred, then the default position is that we provide coverage. That's one of the ultimate problems with their claim. And it's why—
Could prove that it was during, that the damage occurred during the covered loss, or that the covered loss occurred during the policy period, but could not prove the particular date. Would that be sufficient?
No, they have to prove that it occurred during the within that 1 year period, and that's not the case. They tried. What's interesting is, and I think Todd alluded to this, is, and one of the justices here too, in the run-up to trial, we're all required to submit jury charges, of course, so kind of give an idea of what is going to be tried to the court. And their initial question number one is, did Texas Windstorm Insurance Association fail to comply with its insurance policies? And then their instruction is, TWEA failed to comply with the insurance policies if it failed to pay for any damage solely caused by windstorm and or hail during the period of July 8, 2014 and October 1, 2015. That is an acknowledgement that it's their burden. They believe that to be true going into trial, and that the burden was on them to prove that. And that is indeed where the burden should be placed. And indeed, that was the evidence leading into trial. You had—
So why wasn't that question submitted instead of the one that was?
That's not the one he requested be submitted.
That
was not the question that ultimately he requested be submitted.
His
question was that much broader, back to 2012.
But counsel, we all agree that the charge did not track the statute. Is that correct? The question number one did not track the statutory language.
It did not follow, absolutely. The exact language, but that is not error in this case.
Okay, tell me why.
So I can't agree with it. Well, for one thing, nothing requires that, first off, nothing requires strict adherence to the statute. I'm not aware of anything that requires strict adherence. It's the Krishan versus Ramirez case that came out of this court that talked about that you should not reverse a judgment because of a, quote, failure to submit other and various phrases in different shades of the same question. If you just say, was our denial proper or just proper, there are no guidelines for a jury to consider what is proper. And there are no guardrails to keep them in track of what constitutes proper. They could come up with some idea of what's proper. So you go to the next level of that and say, what constitutes proper? Well, it's whether or not Texas Windstorm complied with the policy. Did they make the coverage decisions consistent with the requirements under the policy? So what the question that was submitted simply incorporates what likely would have been the instruction. So there's no harm, there's no error there. The other thing is, more importantly, that the error of what they're complaining is waived, because the jury question they submitted, has that same language. Did Texas Windstorm fail to comply with its insurance policies? And so that they have waived that. That's the Robinson and Harrison case, also from this court, that said a party cannot invite error by requesting an issue and then objecting to its submission.
So did the knowledge requirements that were ultimately submitted?
Pardon me?
Did their proposal include these knowledge requirements that was ultimately submitted?
It did, but that's of no moment, because you'll see in their brief, including on page 69, there's no question that Texas Windstorm knew of the claim, investigated the claim, this claim for damages of May 24th, which is the subject of the question, May 24th and April, whatever, April 14, 2015, there's no question that they knew about it and that they investigated it on multiple occasions. So that
well,
really is.
You all have mentioned that there were no other storms or that could have possibly caused the damage or no other dates of significance. And yet the jury was obviously confused by something, which is why they submitted that question. Was there evidence regarding storms that were outside of the limitations period?
Well, here's what the evidence was. Their expert testified, Mr. Trider, was put on the stand, and he did a thorough analysis, and he walked through his analysis of all the weather data from 2012 to 2015, and he ruled out all dates with respect to windstorm damage except one, May 24th, 2015. He testified that that is the only date when that damage could occur. And so it necessarily included all the dates and all the time period that Mr. Lipscomb and Valstay is saying. And then there were two dates for hail. One was in 2012, maybe could have occurred, but that is far outside the 1 year limit. And then April 14th, 2015, he was emphatic about it. He issued a report that was before the jury about it. The trouble was that he got busted. And in cross-examination, he was shown photographs from the same place he took his photographs over 2 years after the data loss that showed no damage after the storm. So it had to have occurred in between. So that's why the jury ultimately didn't believe him. But by his own testimony, he ruled out all these other dates. And then Mr. Lipscomb is correct that there is looking at pictometry, which is how they did this, between 2012 and 2014, December 2014, there appeared to be some changes on the roof that suggested wind damage. But that doesn't tell you a date. That's no evidence of a date that would tell you when it occurred other than between 2012 and 2015. It's important to understand this. This inspection that Mr. Lipscomb is talking about, in which an engineer got on the roof. This is an inspector from TDI, not Texas Windstorm, got up in March of 2013. Texas corporate rep Paul Strickland testified to this. He's not looking at the general condition of the roof. His only job is to go up there and make sure that the repairs that were performed, because the roof was in bad condition, the repairs that were performed pursuant to code. He doesn't look at the totality of the whole roof. He's only looking at the repairs. So to say that there were no damage to the roof in 2013 based upon this inspection is incorrect. It just means that the patches that were done and the repairs that were done, and you can see them in the pictometry, were done pursuant to code. So that doesn't necessarily rule out damage before then. And in fact, there is testimony that looking at the pictometry, some of the damage predated 2012 when comparing it to a 2009 pictometry. So there is all this, but no evidence of any other event, no event capable of causing damage other than the ones that Mr. Trider testified to, and the jury didn't believe him. And so that's when this pivoted from their proposed question one, which put the burden on Valstay, it pivoted to Texas Windstorm saying, you know what? They recognized we hadn't met our burden. So we're now going to put the burden on Texas Windstorm. And we do not believe that's the law. We believe the statute requires it as a condition for coverage they have to prove that it occurred within the 1 year limit. You know, that Gilbert case, which is cited by both parties, Gilbert versus Texas Constructors, the Texas one, Texas Supreme Court 2010, says that the insured has the burden of establishing coverage under the terms of the policy. And although that's not a TWIA policy, that language was adopted by the 14th Court of Appeals in 2018 in the TWIA versus Dickinson Independent School District, where they said the same thing, that insured is not entitled to recover under an insurance policy unless it proves its damages are covered by the terms of the policy. One of the terms of the policy is this 1 year reporting requirement, which unlike other carriers in their policies, this is mandated by the Texas legislature. And that was important in this to this court in the Housing and Community Services case.
Counselor, I have a question. You sure. referred to the Robinson case in regards to jury questions. Can you cite that case again?
Yes, Robinson and Harrison versus Galvan. You know, I don't have
counsel. That's okay, counsel. I was the attorney representing Robinson and Harrison in that case many years ago. I was trial counselor, but I, yeah, so I'm familiar with it.
I defer to your interpretation of it. The problem, one of the problems with their interpretation is that it's contrary to public policy also. As I said, that what they're espousing is that all they have to do is simply propose a date, not propose a date, but say, I've got damage. Now, Twee, you go out and find it. And this explosion in litigation would diminish being able to maintain Texas Windstorm as a marketable alternative. Well, it's not alternative, it's insure of last resort, and maintain the viability of Texas Windstorm. And so we believe that that was one of the purposes of the legislature of making the 1 year limit, reporting limit, not one of limitation or avoidance, but is in fact a condition of coverage that's reflected in the policy and is reflected in the statute. So if you have no other questions, I cede my 1 minute.
Thank you, Mr. Salyer.
Thank you.
Mr. Lipscomb? You're muted, sir. You're still muted.
I have to use sign language.
There we go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Sounds like a commercial for AT&T or somebody, doesn't it? You walk around. Sorry about that. You can tell from the shotgun approach the key problem that TWEA has. They say it's strict statutory construction when they're different, when it helps them. They want to rely upon common law or other cases when it doesn't. And there's some twisted language going on here that's not quite accurate. And the first one I'd like to go to is the Windstorm Insurance Association for Dickinson. It doesn't say you got to defeat all their bases for exclusions. The quote is this, and it's from this court. Thus, to obtain judgment against TWEA for breach of the policy, DICD first had to establish that direct physical loss to its covered property were caused by a windstorm or hail. In the instance, windstorm or hail during Hurricane Ike. And actually, this one's from Houston. I apologize for that. But the situation there isn't where they say you got to disprove all these exclusions. It simply says that you have to prove the covered loss. Now, what did come from this court was the Housing and Community Services case. And after it states that it is statutory, after the court regrets that it has a strict construction, it also does say this, quote, section 2210.573A sets forth a clear and unambiguous 1 year limitations period for when a claimant might file a claim with TWEA, subject to 180-day discretionary extension from the Commissioner of Insurance. Points to twofold. They pled it as an affirmative defense. If you look at their pleadings, they knew that this statutory period was a one-year defense, and that's how it was pled. Two, as the courts pointed out, is an exclusion, and the case law indicates that it's a limitation. Under his current and changed theory, he would be arguing that if it violated the statute of limitations, that would also somehow be our burden of proof.
But are you arguing, sir, Mr. Lipscomb, are you arguing that it would not be your burden to pinpoint certain dates that occurred within that 1 year time frame when the damage occurred?
Correct, Your Honor. Because all we have to do is show when damage occurred, covered wind damage in that time period. And if you look at the statute, it says the only issues a claimant may raise in an action brought under the association is whether the denial of coverage, not the claim, is proper. And so when you say the denial of coverage, what you're talking about is, did they deny it? In this case, going back to the problems with it, they never denied it because of late notice. They never even told us there was late notice. They didn't even tell us their own engineer slash architect found the damage occurred within the policy period, or that their own adjuster told them that there might be coverage. Instead, they said, well,
that's the case. Isn't that evidence of failure to comply? And if so, then obviously the jury didn't agree with that.
And that's because they were limited to those 2 dates. And that's why they asked the specific question, are we only limited to those dates rather than any of those dates before December 14? And that's the whole problem. In putting those 2 dates in there, you convert this policy into, instead of a 365-day policy, or in this case, one that goes back decades, you convert it to a 2-date policy. And so under TWIA's analysis, if they prove that the storm came in at midnight, but the damage occurred at 3 a.m., we'd be a day off. If it came back and it said, you know what, there's a situation here and the storm raged for 72 hours. And because of that, that's not just 1 date. That's all the question had. It's a game of gotcha. And that's why they want to have their cake and eat it too. When the statute helps them, like it did in this, in the case of the community services, they want strict compliance with it. But here, don't ask the question in the form of, was it proper? Here, we want you to go outside of whether or not you can raise that issue itself, but we want to say all of our defenses, whether you know them or have notice of them or not, you have to disprove. And that's really what his argument is. Because in this case, what is different about every other is we know, and their own corporate rep admits, that all of the loss, all of that win-loss occurred in this time period. We know that it's there. And their own adjuster estimated. What was in dispute is we believe the whole roof had to be replaced. And we thought there was more damage. And we thought that additional damage occurred in 2015. But that does not exclude, it does not eliminate the fact that every single person found wind damage within that window. Now, he likes to harp on upon our expert. And believe me, I wish the jury would have believed our expert. But they obviously didn't. Otherwise, they would have answered those 2 dates. And just as they were not bound to follow him on those 2 dates, they're not bound to follow him on any of the other testimony either. And that's why they asked a very specific question that came back to the court. Are we limited to only those 2 dates, or can we consider prior dates? And that's what it gets to, because those 3 or 4 patches, that $340,000 was never in dispute. But because of the way the question was asked, because it was limited to only those 2 dates, the jury couldn't even give us that bare minimum.
And Mr. Linscomb, did the evidence support prior dates to that were within that 1-year period?
Yes, and here's why. There is not mention of, say, a per se storm, Cat 7 or Cat 73, but there were lots of dates, and everybody indicated there's lots of stormy weather down there. 30, 40 mile per hour winds are not out of the ordinary.
Yeah, and today.
And that's the issue, is that you have these patches. They were definitely blown back. No one said humans did that. Nobody said it was caused by animals or anything else. They all said it was done by wind. And that's the trick. What they're trying to change the policy to is this has to have some sort of threshold on a storm. It has to have a name associated with it. It has to occur on this specific date. And if it was just nothing more than saying, we think the damage occurred in the past, I can see where his problem is. But that's not this case. They had a chance to inspect the property because Key Services is who was hired by TWIA to go out and investigate. Key Services came out there and said, well, let me see what the problems are. They identified the problems. Then Voss Engineering in March of 2013 went out there, said, you made repairs. These repairs are acceptable. And these repairs are the patches we're talking about. Then when these patches didn't blow up sometime between 2013 and 2015, which every single person says is by wind, TWIA plays gotcha. You can't tell us the exact date it happened on, so we don't owe you anything, ever. And the reason you don't know what date it was, or the reason you didn't get a 180-day extension, which they seem to ignore, is because we didn't tell you. Because our expert in the file told us it happened before December 2014, our adjuster questioned that, and we hid it from you. And where the problem comes in is if they had told us it was late reporting or they told us something else, we could have gone to the Commissioner of Insurance and gotten a potential 180-day extension. So then the limitations period wouldn't even, the reporting period wouldn't have been from July of 2014, but all the way back to January. And now we're covering the majority of that time period that we say the damage could have even occurred in. And that's the problem. TWIA wants to hide behind their lack of an investigation. They want to, and they could have ascertained that date. They chose not to. They intentionally didn't look at it. Their lack of notification. And they want to ignore both the statute as well as their own procedures for making sure that it's done right such as inspections, their own adjuster's notes, and the fact that every single one of their people said wind damage occurred in this time period, and their own corporate rep said, and this is the only issue in the case.
Counselor, before you go, I just want to ask you one quick question. Would you address opposing counsel's comment regarding public policy that if we go in the way you want us to go, that this will open a floodgate?
No.
Litigation.
Thank you, Your Honor. Pretty rare case when every expert in the case concludes the damage was caused by one thing, and that being a covered peril. Almost every case ends up being a dispute differently about that. Second of all, what makes this case unique is that we had that very, by the scheme of things, a fairly narrow window of approximately 2-3 years where we knew what the baseline was. If we didn't have a baseline situation, and take for example, they started insuring this property, let's say in the mid to late 90s, and they never inspected it. We never made any changes to the property. The engineer never came out and says it was acceptable. Then that damage could have occurred anywhere in that 15, 20 year window. What is unique about this, and it's very specific, and this is why we did it this way, is that we knew their people admitted that was confined to this time period. And that's why we had a stipulation referring to that time period, so there wasn't a change in policy and conditions. Because one of the things that can happen is if you go back 20 years, you have different policies, they can have different terms, different conditions, different insuring clauses. We don't have that problem here. That's why we entered the stipulation. And we knew that shortly before trial, because what happened was we deposed their architect, 2 weeks before trial. So after we turned in the charge, after we turned in a proposed charge, is when we found out he changed his theory. So we found out about his report that said December of 14. And all these things came up. And so with opening, that's when I present the chart we have in our brief saying, here's the window of opportunity. Here's the chance that it has. And that's when it all changed.
Thank you very much.